Good morning. I'm John Walsh, and I represent the Innerbreds in this appeal.
Would you like to reserve time?
Thank you. I would. 3 minutes would be sufficient. This case really is about some of the most shoddy medical practice that can ever be described. And we've got a situation where there's a potential for physicians and a healthcare organization, MultiCare, and a corporation running a wound healing clinic to get off scot-free.
Don't we really have a technical legal issue here, though?
And that we
is
do.
Whether or not
yeah.
you're required to present evidence with numbers in it about the percentage of loss of chance and whether you did that.
That is the issue.
This may be the most reprehensible health care anyone's ever seen.
Right.
We don't pass judgment on that. We pass judgment on whether you satisfied the legal requirements to demonstrate a prima facie case, that you had at least a disputed evidence about each element of it. We're not a jury, so all of what you've just said is you're wasting your time.
Okay. Well, you have appropriately narrowed the issue. And the question is, is it a legal requirement that we present expert opinion that there is a percentage or range of percentages to survive summary judgment? And I argued that there is not any requirement to submit an expert declaration assigning percentages.
Was the plaintiff's theory against Dr. Tseng, and again, I hope I'm pronouncing the name
correctly. That's correct.
And MultiCare, was it that there was a loss of chance or just general negligence somehow? I mean, it wasn't clear to me in your brief, because it looked like at one point you were saying, I made a note, this is your complaint, you said, I can't remember if it was a complaint, but this is a system failure medical malpractice case, which sounds more like what you were starting to argue.
Yes.
But in the end, the argument was it was a loss of chance to survive, and that's why the motion was granted as to Dr. Tseng and MultiCare. Other than, including the only one that survived was, I think Dr. Chang's case went to the jury.
That's correct. So by the time we did argue the motion for summary judgment, we were claiming loss of chance as to Dr. Tseng, Healogics, the company that ran the wound healing clinic, and MultiCare. And so that was the backdrop. I'd like to discuss why I think that percentages aren't required, and how I think particularly other divisions of this court have got to that level. In the Rash case, for example, cited by defense counsel in the case, they refer to percentages being required. And they get to that that position by saying that, well, every case that dealt with loss of chance, Herskovitz and Moore and others, they all had experts who testified or who did assign percentages or range of percentages. And therefore, Rash implied that, well, it's necessary. But no Supreme Court case has ever said that. And I cited to this court the Volk case, while not precisely and not ruling precisely on it, but seemed to imply that that percentages may not be required if you have an expert who can give an opinion on a more probable than not basis that, yes, this is my opinion, it's more likely true, and it's based upon my scientific training, education, and background, and whatnot. That's where I think the Rash case went off the rails and conflated this into a requirement that we present percentages. And it makes sense to not require us to present percentages. Think about how we would arrive at percentages in failure to diagnose cancer cases like they did in Herskovitz. So in Herskovitz, they had an expert saying that, okay, at X date, our patient would have been at stage 3 of cancer. And they failed to diagnose the cancer at stage 3 at certain X date. When they finally did diagnose it, it was stage 4. And we know by studies, peer review studies, that your chances of surviving cancer are decreased by X percentage over this period of time. But what if we have a situation where the physicians or the healthcare providers are so negligent that they don't even undertake to monitor or to do anything to diagnose the cancer, and you're prohibited from understanding what stage you're at?
Dr. Koh, I mean, plaintiff tried several times to get Dr. Koh to that point.
Yeah.
He just kept saying, you know, it just wouldn't have made any difference. I mean,
yeah.
I'm oversimplifying, I'm sure, but
no,
the way
yeah,
I read his
not,
declaration,
yeah.
it was such a
yeah.
virulent form of cancer,
yeah.
it wouldn't have made any difference.
Yeah.
Well, couldn't the law deal with that by allowing you to assume that someone is at stage 1 when they present, and whatever percentage is the difference between stage 1 and when the diagnosis is made? Because you certainly couldn't diagnose it before the person had the cancer.
Right, right.
So take the most optimum position and then mm-hmm. take whatever the percentage of survival is for
mm-hmm.
people in that optimum position, and that's the chance you've lost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I assume all of these percentage numbers come from trials before the drugs are approved to begin with. They may become refined as people get treated after the drug is approved, but we begin with drugs getting approved because they do increase by some measurable percentage people's survival rates for at least
mm-hmm.
defined periods of time.
Yeah. I don't know of any case that does take that approach. That is,
finish your question.
Okay, that does take that approach and use or assume that it's a stage 1, and then try to subject.
Well, how would you instruct the jury otherwise as to how it determines damages if you don't have any percentages?
Well, I think we do that all the time in cases. We don't ask juries in auto accident cases, for example, to say that it's 51% or more, or 53% or 55% likely that.
Well, we ask them to decide it's at least 50 point whatever comes out
right,
of the zeros,
right.
And once you get there, then you assess damages.
Right.
That's on liability, mm-hmm. but on damages, which is where I'm focusing my question. It seems to be problematic if you don't know whether this person would have had a 10% chance or 90% chance, because the number is certainly going to be a lot different
right.
between those two. I would expect it would be.
Well, I'd argue that we ask juries to decide damages on a more probable than not basis all the time without manufacturing artificial percentages. And I think that's the danger. If we're going to now require this, it's going to be an artificially produced form of evidence that's not consistent with our tort law. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, we are going to split argument 5 minutes each for Ms. Spillane and I and Bertha Fitzer representing Dr. Tsang. And I'll take five.
I'll let it run at 10. And you can make
okay. I've handed out to the court simply a timeline of when things happened, so the court has a firm understanding of what the posture of this case was and why I made the unusual request for terms. With due respect to opposing counsel, he's fundamentally wrong about a number of issues. You cannot have a damages without going through the traditional tort law of negligence and causation. And in a traditional case, causation is determined by more probable than not. Then you get damages. That would be the ideal. In a loss of chance case, whether it be survival or better outcome. You can't reach the 51%. And therefore, your injury, as defined by Herskovitz, Rash, Moore, and Dunnington, is in fact that percentage. If you don't have evidence of the percentage, you don't have an injury. You haven't proved causation of an
injury. So when Dr. Timmerman opines there was a 98% chance of survival, it's not really a loss of chance case. Is that right? Is that
yes, that's true.
So the theory that was submitted to the jury was just, for lack of a better term, a general negligence case. That her death could have been prevented.
And I don't want to speak to the trial because right. Dr. Tseng was dismissed on summary judgment.
No, I understand.
But that is my belief. That is what occurred. But the problem is that Dr. Temple's declaration doesn't cure the defect for Tseng and Hegelogic's. The wound clinic.
And we look at the state of the record at the time the summary judgment was considered by the trial court and what the evidence was about whether the alleged negligence of the other defendants contributed to the defendant or the plaintiff's demise. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And if there's no evidence either of a percentage or that it was more likely than not that it was a proximate cause of his death, then that summary judgment is the appropriate remedy.
That's correct.
And your position is there is no evidence in either of those categories.
That is absolutely correct. It's that simple. There is absolutely no evidence of an injury. Dr. Coe was deposed. He refused to sign the declaration. He says, I cannot put a percentage on it. And that's as simple as it is, Your Honor. They didn't define the injury, couldn't meet causation. Summary judgment was appropriate. And if there are no other questions.
What if Dr. Code said 1%? I mean, if he says it, he lost some chance, isn't he conceding at least 1%?
He's not. If you read the deposition testimony.
And how can you have the opinion it caused some loss of chance without some minimal number?
Because there was no loss of chance. That's the problem. The problem was that on August 13, 2013, the cancer had already gone into the bone. That made it a stage 4 cancer with survivability not likely to occur. That's why he said, I cannot put a percentage on it. It didn't make a difference.
What about the quotation from Dr. Coe here in your handout? A delaying diagnosis caused a delay in known effective treatments whose purpose is to significantly increase a patient's chance of a better outcome, including Mr. Enebrad. Following up on Judge Leach's question, isn't there an inference that it's at least 1%?
Your Honor, that inference, I think, existed only so long as up until Dr. Coe was deposed, at which point he backtracked and said, I cannot make it, which is why I put out the sequence of events. And it is the fact that that statement is being repeated now as support that I find to be sanctionable conduct, because counsel knows that Dr. Coe would not support his case. No further questions, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Mary Spillane, and I represent MultiCare Health System. And obviously, there are two issues vis-a-vis MultiCare Health System, and that's the reason we split some time, so that I could deal with the other issues. Unless there are other questions concerning the loss of chance, the only thing I would point out is if you look at CP 614, Dr. Coe ultimately in his deposition said the delay, I cannot say, made a difference. It probably did not make a difference. So I think that's the end of the claims vis-a-vis Dr. Tseng. As far as MultiCare, the other issue is the admission of certain evidence, limited evidence, concerning Mr. Enebrad's drug usage. And I would submit that the trial court clearly properly exercised his discretion. The evidence was probative on three different issues. First of all, life expectancy, and with respect to the evidence regarding life expectancy, the court very carefully gave a limiting instruction regarding the cocaine evidence that Dr. Kovar testified about. But it was also relevant, one, to the difficulty in pain management that Dr. Chang, without objection at the time of trial, testified about. And thirdly,
pain management an issue?
to the extent that part of the claims underlying, and particularly for the survival claims, would involve the pain and suffering, yes. And then the third issue that it was related to the development of the cancer and why it wasn't until the end of things that it actually manifested itself through the skin graft. And so the evidence through Dr. Carson, again, not objected to at the time, was that because of the heroin injections that resulted in the skin breakdown that necessitated the skin graft, that's the reason that for this very aggressive cancer, it took the path of least resistance, went down deep, penetrated the bone, and it was only at the end that it became evident that the Margolin's ulcer was there. So the evidence was probative. The trial court went even further, though, because he recognized that this kind of evidence does have the potential for prejudice, and so very carefully circumscribed it, sustained objections when appropriate, limited the number of exhibits that could come in with respect to the cocaine use in particular, and ultimately gave the limiting instruction sua sponte. That's not an abuse of discretion to have allowed the evidence in this case. And so we ask that not only the summary judgments be affirmed, but also that the judgment on the jury's verdict be affirmed.
Do you read Moore and Herskovitz as counsel does? It's not requiring the percentage that Division II just made that up?
Division III, I think, is Rash, yes.
Wherever Rash came from.
Yeah, Division III. No, I don't read them that way at all. I think the starting premise is, first of all, you've got to have a starting percentage, because if your evidence is that it's greater than 50%, you're in traditional proximate cause. You're not even in the loss of chance arena. Then, in order to ultimately get to damages, you have to be able to decide, okay, what is that percentage loss of chance? If you don't have those percentages, you can't assess damages. You can't tell whether you're really in the realm of a loss of chance case and deserve instructions on it. So, yes, there has to be evidence of percentages in order to make out the claim and to show that, indeed, there was a loss of chance. And then I would also note that in a case out of this court, the Zuger versus Public Hospital District case, which I don't think is cited in the briefs, the other thing that's important is that it has to be a substantial loss of chance. And in order to determine substantiality, you also need percentages.
And 1% wouldn't be substantial.
1% would not be substantial in my view, no. And I can't think of any case that would say that 1% loss of chance, if you had that evidence, which we don't have in this case, is sufficient. Thank you. I ask that you affirm the trial court's decisions.